Welcome back. Another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Pete Chiones back on the show. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing really well.
Of course, you are the host of the Pete Chiones show. There's no fixed schedule for that, is it? You just kind of record whenever?
No. It's supposed to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I normally release the day before at like 5:30 in the afternoon. So
okay.
Basically Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursdays. And I've been on that schedule now for 4 years. So
okay. Yeah. I guess there's no fixed schedule to when I listen to it. So
yeah.
Catch it. So anyway, this past week or so, this slavery has become a big issue in the United States. Now it's kind of funny because I recall that learning in history that slavery was prohibited back in 1865. Am I right about that?
Yes, that would be, I believe it's the 13th Amendment. Yes.
The 13th Amendment. Now, I remember there was an original proposed 13th Amendment called the Corwin Amendment, which was proposed actually to preserve slavery, to prevent the brewing secession, or sort of to deal with the brewing secession crisis in the wake of the election of Abraham Lincoln. It preserved, I think it read, "No amendment shall be made to the Constitution which shall authorize or give to the Congress the power to abolish or interfere within any state with the domestic institutions thereof, including that of persons held to labor or service by the laws of said state." So slavery wasn't mentioned actually in that amendment, but it does mention institutions, which I guess included the peculiar institution. But that was the original idea that was meant to avert the secession crisis. But nevertheless, as things transpired, you know, we had the war, 1865, the 13th Amendment prohibits slavery. I think the actual wording is neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So that's ending of chattel slavery in the United States. I guess that solved the controversy, right?
Well, it's always something, a weapon that's used now. I'm one of those people who believes we'd probably have flying cars if we didn't use slavery. The whole trope that, you know, slaves built this nation, anyone who really understands slavery knows that slavery is probably the worst form of labor. Those slaves are going to do just enough to not get in trouble. This country would be in a lot better shape if people would have just paid competent white labor to, you know, pick cotton or do whatever. You know, maybe if it was competent white people doing it, they would have came up with a way to automate it a lot sooner. And yeah, I'm one of those people who looks back on slavery and I'm like, you know, there's a couple of reasons I don't really like slavery. One is because, yeah, it's just a terrible form of labor. And it's just, it's awful. And two, you basically import a foreign element into the country that is still here. And, we can talk about statistics if we want.
Yeah, well, as it turns out, wage slavery and debt slavery is a far more effective way to bleed your population, grind it, exploit it.
Well, yeah, because you know, everyone pretty much has to deal with that. So it's not just a black thing. It's not a skin color thing. It can be anyone.
And in the meantime, they think they're free.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you consider how much of your income, when you combine like all the taxes, you know, any taxes you pay for driving, property and everything. I mean, you're getting well into, if you're of a certain income bracket, into 50 to 60%, then in that case, you may as well just live in Sweden where, you know, with the, income tax in the VAT, it takes you up to 60%, but at least there are some halfway decent public services there that a foreign element is destroying there now. So.
Yeah, when Sweden was homogenous and it seemed to work a lot better, although I'd argue that kind of set into motion the demoralization. The Swedish welfare state didn't really kick in to the 1960s. And then that also coincided with the introduction of feminism to the country. So it's sort of it's emasculation now in the wake of an invasion by foreigners, by outside powers, was eased by the sort of demoralization of the 60s and 70s, I think, you know. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And what most people don't know is when Sweden decided to embrace a large welfare state, the reason they did that is, which is very typical with a lot of white nations, is they were very prosperous for decades. They had a very laissez-faire kind of economy for a lot of decades. And I guess the homogenous population.
More important, they were neutral. They stayed out of both wars.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. That's the devastation of Europe.
that helps a lot too. Yeah. But, you know, you have a homogenous population and you can start talking about things like laissez-faire and having a more open kind of market. And then, you know, you can also, you know, it works a little better for a welfare state because you don't have the, you know, the foreign, how we have people who come in from other places and abuse the welfare system here. And it causes people to, be upset and it causes divisions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now they're feeling that themselves. I remember when the, I don't even know how many people remember this, that some of those immigration centers that were set up, I mean, we're talking about just 6 years ago, they'd set up immigration centers and like Swedish nationalists would go in there and burn them to the ground.
Yeah. It's interesting now they had riots there because someone was burning the Quran.
Yeah.
And there's also riots like this. Was it Iraq where the embassy was assaulted or something?
I didn't know about that.
But it's interesting that if you start talking about immigration and criticizing the newcomers and talking about the rape crisis, you can get arrested in Sweden. But nevertheless, they have to permit the burning of the Quran to provoke a riot in the name of freedom of speech. Actually, the prime minister actually said that.
You really have to wonder what direction that high Nordic IQ is going in when somebody says something like that.
Yeah, it's something else. You have the same problem with some of the Scandinavians who came to America, who settled the Midwest and who were ripe for exploitation with recent years. You know, how places like Minnesota, Minneapolis used to be very peaceful, quiet, well-ordered cities, filled with Scandinavian Americans, and now they've imported hundreds of thousands of Somalis and also other, blacks from around the country. A lot of them from Chicago, from what I understand, because of the welfare benefits in Minnesota, and that's really upset the state there. The balance that it enjoyed, it was very liberal, but it worked because, like, the way that liberal Vermont works, I think.
It's interesting, you know, when I think of places that, you know, I would possibly move. I mean, I'm not moving. I like where I am. But even though like a Vermont or a Maine is really considered to be like a Democrat state, it's still a very homogenous state with low crime. Mm-hmm. And, people like their guns. I mean, so it's like if I had that choice or to be in a state that a red state that was, with high crime, that had some high crime areas.
Perhaps that's what makes it red, because of the experience. I read an article. There was a post by the Z-Man who wrote about this, about white nationalism, so-called, where it exists. It tends to do well in areas that are more diverse. Areas that are more homogenous tend to be very liberal in these things. and low identity, low sense of ethnic identity among the whites, whereas it tends to, I guess, in the in the forge of of a high crime, this identity is formed or forged, if you will. And so he's noticed that it's yes, like Joe Serbern made the comment that white liberals, like around a university, they'll have this the mating habits of the Ku Klux Klan or something, and and they're who they socialize with. But their politics will be really liberal because they can indulge in some of these luxury beliefs or fantasies about human, about behavior of certain groups. It's an apparent paradox, but it's not something that's not if you really think about it. Just like the most romantic portrayals of American Indians were people back east, not the people who actually dealt with them. It was
Right.
so that's you see that phenomenon. But this issue came up, I mean, recently because there was this a curriculum down in Florida, a new curriculum for African American history that was approved by the Florida Board of Education that included lessons that teach slavery apparently had some personal benefits, meaning that people, I think there was a blurb or a point in the curriculum that taught that many slaves had acquired skills. Otherwise, that they were able to exploit after emancipation, which I don't think is a very controversial statement. I think it's just, yeah, it is what it is. But then Kamala Harris went down there. Chris Kamala, not being the brightest of sort and also being very cynical at the same time, misrepresented and said that the curriculum's there. Of course, championed by Republican candidate Ron DeSantis, saying that slavery had personal benefits, therefore it was a good thing. Which, of course, that wasn't what the curriculum was saying. In fact, the curriculum was written by several Black historians and scholars, and actually they had some words for Kamala Harris, misrepresenting their work in it. But in any way, she made a political point about it, trying to politicize this. Surprise, surprise! It's a complete misrepresentation of the curriculum. But it just goes to show that this issue, again, kind of we talked about in our opening comments, is that despite the fact that slavery has been prohibited since 1865, it's still an issue, a wound that they want to scratch, make sure it never heals, the fact that it gets infected, so they can create further divisions within the country and also foster this sort of this phenomenon of white guilt. Where because I think what happened was Ron DeSantis, a lot of this curriculum is a response to some of his he's posturing politically too, but he's positioned himself as some of the anti DEI candidate, the anti 1619 project or critical race theory guy. So he's trying to stake out a position on the right on these issues. So he's working through trying to change the curriculum. A lot of these schools are reversing a lot of this critical race theory crap that have been. That has been shoved down students' throats the past several years, so they're trying to make it sort of make it a culture war, racial issue out of it. So that's why I think well that and also di distracting from all the scandals of the Biden administration, all the problems in the economy. The economy's collapsing. Look, there's slavery, right? Don't pay attention to what's going on. We can talk about slavery and white supremacy. Is that what you make of it? Or?
Well, yeah, I mean it's a diversion, but it's also just one of those tools in their toolbox that they keep going to that just continues to work. All horrors when it comes to the West and especially the United States have to be unique. I've heard many activists, not many, but a few activists, and not some that whose names would be common, say that basically, slavery was invented in the United States. I mean, they've literally said that. And if you have something that works and you can turn it, if you have something that was terrible that works, and I think it was terrible, mostly because it was just horrible labor, and you shouldn't. It's just terrible. I don't really judge slavery on morality because I know like Irish people have been slaves at some point, Spanish people were slaves at some point, and pretty much, most groups have at some point been enslaved.
Even Slavic people.
Yeah, I mean that's where the name comes from. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got a two for being half Slavic and half Spanish.
There you go.
but the
Who's going to write your reparations check?
yeah. Well, I know who it would be in the on the Spanish side, and they don't want to hear that because
Oh.
they're one of those groups that talks about unique horrors all the time. You can only talk about one genocide. You're not allowed to equivocate and talk about the Holodomor or the Armenian genocide or anything like that. Yeah, I think the activists in this country do a really good job of turning everything into every horror that they see that's happened in the past into some kind of unique horror. And they play off that, whether it happened or not, whether it happened the way they said it happened or not. It's just another, hammer to keep bludgeoning people with. And, when you have captured academia, captured the media, captured, social media, and you've captured the state, you can
Well,
keep
yeah, it's not,
playing it. Yeah.
and it's not black activists or politicians like Kamala Harris, who, by the way, from what I understand, is descended from slave owners, whereas I am not, if that means anything. It's not black politicians or black activists that make the issue as consequential or as important as it appears to be. It's those who control the narrative in the media, right? I mean, otherwise, they could spin it a narrative that would just say it's over with. Stop whining about it, right? But obviously, they have an interest in agitating, keeping that group constantly in a state of agitation, and also ignorance, and so they can be used as sort of a bludgeoned or to well, to occasionally riot and hem and haw and cry and make Whitey apologize, and also to create pathologized ethnic white identity. First boiling it down to whiteness to begin with, right? Simplifying down to that,
Yeah, the press, look how much power they have. All they had to do was announce that COVID is over. And yeah, you don't hear about COVID anymore. People, every once in a while, I saw someone wearing a mask yesterday in the supermarket, and I was just, I thought I was in a time machine of some sort, because you really don't see that a lot anymore unless you go into certain ethnic kind of stores where I live. But yeah, it's having the media and having it's amazing that people still actually believe the media, and it really goes to show that I don't know if I know the boomer generation is still believes what they see on TV. So many of them do, and I think the Gen X may still be there. But it is still incredible how one announcement, one coordinated kind of thing where every newspaper and most of the TV stations in the country make an announcement that something is over or something is important, and people just move on with it. It's like, I mean, this is how you know that like democracy is a joke, and these people who are like, oh, we need to get as many people on our side to believe like we do. I'm like, probably 30% of the country believes that the election in 2020 was rigged. That's like 100 million people. So 100 million people believe in this country believe the election was rigged in 2020, and what are they doing about it?
Are they going to vote
Nothing.
again?
Oh yeah, they just want Trump to run again because Trump's going to get in there and he's going to be more successful than he was the first time.
Yeah.
Has he been studying Machiavelli and Gaetano Mosca and De Juvenal?
He's drawing up a prescription list.
It's remarkable. I mean, Trump, these are just there's no one who's stepping up and has the ability to change anything. And so, yeah, I think at this point, all we can really do is take care of ourselves and take care of our families. And, you know, if you're in a really terrible area, you move into an area that's more people to share your values. And really, that's winning at this point until, you know, something can be, and I think people can still influence local politics. But you know, if you have people, if you're national, quote unquote, leaders are invoking slavery.
Oh, yeah. There was a tweet recently by J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, telling people to memorize, to remember the lynching of Emmett Till, 1955.
Yeah,
he's the governor of Illinois, and in Chicago, anywhere from a couple dozen of black men are shot to death, and they're shooting each other, the blacks, right, in Chicago, and we're supposed to, and not to mention the crime that's visited upon white people in Chicago. And other people in Chicago by black,
and Jesse,
black crime.
And Jesse Smollett, so let's not forget him.
Yeah, yes. but the, you know, there is, and then there's, you know, there's Joe Biden. We need a law, an anti-lynching law. Emmett Till. It's 1955. If I do my math, that's 68 years ago. And of course, the circumstances of that event are somewhat debatable, or at least under question. He apparently did assault a white woman. Not to mention that he should be convicted for the sins of his father. His father was convicted of rape and hung in Italy during World War II. But then they make movies about it, and so everyone thinks about it, and it's the public consciousness, and that people's perception of history is often through the movies. So we have to worry. You know, we're in the middle of a huge black crime wave, and how many white victims have there been? Other ethnic groups been victimized by black crime. We're supposed to obsess over this incident back in 1955. You know, is that really relevant to today's problems? No. Is there a lynching problem? No. Not really. If anything, there's a police stand down. So you might actually get some vigilantism if the police and the government doesn't step up and start, you know, enforcing the law and protecting property. Otherwise, the people have no choice, right? You saw that, yeah. You know, that controversy of that song, Aldean's song, "Try That in a Small Town."
Really, but I live in a small town. Try that in a small town.
So, but the idea that, you know, again, the song is apparently is dog whistling or suggesting vigilantism because they'll take care of their own. Is that true? Is that a little optimistic now at this point?
It really depends. I think it's more of an exception than the rule. Mm-hmm. I think there was a time, but I think that a lot of just people have been completely defanged over time. And it's when you know that you could get in trouble for even defending yourself, that's in the back of your mind.
Yeah, Kyle Rittenhouse, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
or the McMichaels in Georgia. I think they lived in a small town, didn't they?
Yeah, but the idea that the people would get upset over that and turn it into this is a kind of threat against. I mean, the reason he could. I mean, what's the point of that whole? The whole song, it's just not happening in small towns. Yeah, I remember somebody said somebody tried it in the small town of Kenosha and look what happened. I'm like, Kenosha's 100,000 people.
Yeah,
it's not a small town. I mean, I live in a town of 2,400. My wife used to live in a town of 400. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's, you know, when you want to talk about small towns, this is what you're talking about. You're talking about a town where, you know, I walked into a store today and the person who owned the store just happened to be the mother of the grandmother of the kid who's been mowing our lawn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a small town. I had no idea who this person was, no idea who owned it or anything like that. just happened to be before we moved in, someone, the kid mowing our lawn, it was his grandmother. You know, people, the reason you don't have this stuff happen in a small town is everybody knows each other, and someone's going to call your mom and, you know, or your grandmother or your husband or your wife and be like, this person was acting out.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing, they're getting upset over, first of all, a place they don't want to go, never want to go, never will visit.
Yeah. You had that post about Two Americas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You came out today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you look at, when you look at the average, person, New Yorker who lives on the Lower East Side and has completely adopted the progressive ideology, you know, this is, if you want to talk about worry about somebody who's religious and who is a fanatic, that person compared to, you know, my friend who I was talking to today, who owns a chicken house, all my friend who owns a chicken house wants to do is take care of his chickens. When it comes to national politics, he doesn't want to turn New York red. He doesn't want to see New York be, he wants New York to have nothing to do with his life. But the fact is, that person who lives on the, you know, that, you know, whatever his name is, Josh on the Lower East Side in New York, who's a progressive, him just knowing that, you know, my friend who has a, you know, has a chicken house exists, and that, you know, I may own guns or something like that, that person considers us a threat to them, even though I live 1,200 miles from him. So it's like, you know, it's the old trope. It's old now that, you know, people like us just want to be left alone. But people like Josh on the Lower East Side in New York, who's a progressive, is just not willing to leave us alone. So that's, to me, that's the two Americas, is the people who want to be left alone, the people who are just never going to leave you alone. So what is the answer? What's the answer to that? Well, it's either going to be, one is going to dominate the other. Right now it's, you know, Josh's ideology is dominating the whole country and basically the whole Western world, and closing in, you know, we give it 50 years, it'll be the whole world if they allow it. Or, you know, we fight back, and, you know, the easiest way to do that is where, you know, where we stand, where we live, and where we sleep.
Yeah, I think the term is sort of, there's a cultural Bolshevism, which is dominant now. And you kind of were describing there was that sort of puritanical Yankee, you know, they have this missionary zeal to purify the world. And so it's sort of this common, and which mean it's kind of a Jewish perspective on things, right?
Mm-hmm.
A tikkun olam, if you will. And that was the contours of the English Civil War played out in America, because those are the two forces that colonized America. Like the South, you had the Cavaliers, the North, you had the Puritans, and eventually you got a civil war over it, because one group wanted to dominate the other, didn't want to let one the other go, you know. And then they sort of romanticized it with sort of a moral cause, a mission to spread liberty and emancipate the slaves, to justify all the slaughter and the conquest and the raping and the pillaging that it entailed. But then that fused the nation, right? Then you got one nation. and yeah. You know, so America became an imperial America in the 20th century because of those events.
I mean, you hear it when you bring up like Sherman, what Sherman did during the war to mm-hmm. the South. And you know, you'll have progressives will be like, well, you know, you're lucky you didn't get it worse. And it's like, well, why? Why did you want to kill the Southerners? Why do you want to kill Southern families? Oh, because of slavery. Mm-hmm. Okay, how many Southerners owned slaves? Was it 3%? 3%?
Mm-hmm.
No, what was it? Just, I mean, that's the it's basically the same attitude they took toward Germany after the war, after World War II, is, oh, you mean we're just going to Germany in 1946 and 1947 is going to be an open rape zone where where the Soviets can openly rape German women. Why? Well, they shouldn't have voted for Hitler. Well, a lot of them didn't. Well, they're German. Oh, okay. So, all right. I mean, that's the
Well,
same.
yeah, and the
Yeah.
same way, yeah, it imposes, which is one, the Nuremberg regime, which you when you discuss with Thomas 777 a lot, the whole this sort of this, it's not necessarily just not just laws, it's just a whole sort of it's a whole, I guess, dispensation, a political dispensation of how we're supposed to behave and talk and. What's gonna what constitute our political vocabulary was considered appropriate thought
Yeah,
is that
I talked about it with I talked we talked about that with your partner Joe there on my show when we talked about the book The Authoritarian Personality, where they just basically came out and said, look, if you believe there's a bunch of criteria we have here, and if you agree with any of these or more than one of these, you're on the F scale. You're on the fascist scale. You have more of a chance of becoming a fascist of showing fascist tendencies. Well, what are fascist tendencies? Going to church, wanting to have a family, thinking that pedophiles should be, punished beyond what the law allows. Yeah. So that's pretty much what we live under now. The Nuremberg regime is just basically it's a it's basically an overriding ideology of quote unquote anti-fascism. And what is fascism? It's whatever they decided is having a
Yeah,
family.
and they and yes, fascism is conversion therapy.
Yeah.
Fascism is protesting a drag queen story at your local library. So yeah, be careful because their definition of fascism is very broad, and most people don't realize is under their definition, most people are fascists. Therefore, they have to be subject to constant, psyops and psychological warfare and manipulation, nudging and manipulation. And that's what we see today under, the current regime.
Yeah. Oh, another one is they had said was a couple that were great were being proud of any accomplishments that past family members might have had. So being proud of the accomplishments of others just because you shared blood with them, or having any kind of teaching people to obey their parents. Yeah. So. People can. I love when you bring up a book like The Authoritarian Personality. People are like, there's no proof that they even knew about that book at the time, and that they implemented it. Really, how come? Basically, everything in that book is considered fascist now. How come everything that they said in that book, the very last line where they say, "Well, the greatest way to fight this would be to implement Eros." How do what or something that I ask all the time, why is pornography free? I can do a YouTube video where I'm talking about, I don't know, the history of the 30 Years' War, and I can sing one line of lyric from a popular song, and AI and algorithms will pick that up and shut that video down. But you can't remove porn from the internet. No, they implemented Eros. They what did someone write at one time? He said, the greatest way to destroy the family unit, is through pornography. And now it's free on your phone.
Yeah, it's an old strategy. I mean, because they started implementing this that type of program even before Hitler, so you can't even blame Hitler for it. You mean the reaction to Hitler because they did it in Hungary in 1919, 1920.
Yeah.
this type of program. And of course, they were implementing in Hollywood in the 1920s before the production code was imposed on them. And of course, there's Weimar Germany, which of course was the Third Reich was a reaction to, where Jews became dominant, not just in the socialist party, but also in the, among the radical groups, also among the arts, entertainment, cinema, and it all became very sexualized. Not to mention sort of this the exploitation of the German people to the, because of the depressed economy and the explosion in child prostitution and all manner of sexual perversion being celebrated in Weimar Germany. And so there was a sharp reaction to it, which again, they never seemed to acknowledge any responsibility for. It's always they focus on the reaction. Of course, there's a reaction. There's a precipitous act, or what are they reacting to? You know, it's like
Well,
you're not.
they're just
No.
evil, Tim. It was just this evil group of people that, rose up because, they were evil and they wanted to kill people. That was it. That was it. They were jealous of Jewish wealth. That's it. They were just jealous because Jews had money.
Well, they're not jealous of other people's wealth, right? I mean,
That's what I say all the time when somebody comes up with that trope. I'm like, I'm not jealous of Elon Musk.
okay, so it's a question of what they're doing with that wealth,
Yeah.
right?
Well,
Okay, yeah.
how did they get it? How did they achieve it in the first place? And what do they do with it? So like you already mentioned Governor Pritzker. What does he do with his wealth? He promotes transgenderism. One of the biggest promoters of transgenderism in the world.
Yes.
Okay.
And he's a governor. He's a sitting governor of state.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you point out the fact he's Jewish, which factors into his activism, because Jews are very prominent in promoting that. In fact, they celebrate it. There's the Jewish American Committee in May, over when there was Jewish American Heritage Month, produced a video bragging about some. Being, I guess, leaders in promoting these things. I think I was, they were.
Well, do you but you but you're only allowed to judge. Look, that was a single girl was in that video. You only are allowed to judge her as an individual. But,
So I can only, and so
screw all white people.
the American Jewish Committee is just a group of atomized Jewish individuals.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. You're only allowed to judge them on their as individuals or was it the as Abe Foxman, the former head of the ADL, said, Paul Gottfried talked about in a recent speech, someday America will not be a white Christian country, then we'll be safe.
Who's we?
It sounds like he's identifying with a group of people, but we're not allowed to talk about
Well,
that group of people.
what I understand is they haven't been safe in America.
But
How
he's
they?
only one person. He's only speaking for himself, Tim.
Well, if they're not safe in America, how'd they get to control
I don't know. I
I mean, the
don't.
Israeli president shows up, Herzog shows up, and receives 30 standing ovations by our Congress during a session of Congress. So, am I to gather that the Jews aren't safe in America?
Well, I mean,
I mean, it's
name a country they're safer in, except for their, that one over there. Maybe actually, I think they're safer here than they are than there.
well, that's what there might be taking out observing real estate in Ukraine. I think I understand that's being emptied out as we speak.
Well,
So,
yeah, and it looks like they've been planning that for some time. Talked to Dr. Matthew Johnson
I
on my
listened to the
show.
interview, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. And he talks about how it looks like they've been planning groups have moved into Odessa been for a long time. I mean, and Odessa has a been a Jewish stronghold for a very long time. And they've been planning this. It looks like they're planning another Something that I pretty much recognized right after the whole Ukraine thing started was it looks like that's going to be a new Israel. He calls it Dr. Johnson calls it the new Khazaria.
Yeah. Well, there's a history there. He kind of went into the interview about the 17th century, the was it the Kolomensky Rebellion or something?
Kolomensky Rebellion, which
Yeah.
they say after Hitler, it's the one other name that they know, I guess, is they teach you in yeshiva is Kolomensky because
Kolomensky, yeah.
he killed 2 or 3,000 pogrom 2 or 3,000 Jews.
I thought it was 3 million.
Well, on I think the Wikipedia page says like 40,000 or something like that, but there's really no evidence for that.
But this was again, Dr. Johnson went into this. There's a context to this, and one thing is the exploitation of the peasants there by the Jews who'd become tax farmers and managers and financiers for the aristocracy, for the princes and kings. And they were exploiting them ruthlessly, and there was finally people have had enough,
Well,
and
and they've gained so much power that certain elements within that group were preaching an eschatological message like the Messiah was coming.
that's right, because that's not too long after Sabbatai Zevi, right?
Yes.
Is it, does it coincide with it? If I
Yeah.
got that right, 17th, yeah, I
It
think it does, yeah.
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 And that's so he talked about that and
Yeah.
so it, and it's like, well, what did you expect was going to happen? There was going to be a reaction if, first of all, now you've basically become your tenant farmers and you own all the land and you're how'd you acquire this land and you're leasing it out to the people who live on that land and you're money changing and the forced into finance meme, I guess we can throw that one in there too.
And also getting involved in vices, alcohol and prostitution,
Yes. Yeah. Solzhenitsyn talks about that in 2000 in 200 Years Together. The first chapter is a very long chapter about the history going back.
But the Jewish narrative is typical. It's very self-serving. Oh, woe is us, here we are, we're here, we are just minding our own business, being smarter than everyone else, getting rich, and because people are resenting us, then they try to kill us all. And
Yeah.
so we just can't trust these goyim. They go crazy. Never in their analysis or in their narrative. I think they know, but they it's never treated as a reaction. Perhaps they're responsible for some of the behavior because of their bad behavior and how they're treating people.
I mean, and you look at like crime, if certain neighborhoods in the United States have high crime, people will start talking about that and they'll start talking about ways to solve it. And if you have neighborhoods and we're talking about people's ancestral homelands, which are basically being swindled out from under them. And not only that, but people are making alcohol and basically giving it away. Solzhenitsyn talks about this, giving it away to start with, almost like the whole the meme of the pusher, the drug
Yeah,
pusher in
and
the
they're
United
exploiting a
States.
high trust Christian society,
Yeah.
and so and they think that the goyim, the peasants, are just stupid because they're trusting.
And they might be.
There might
And
be,
they
yeah, exactly, not sophisticated, but that's not an
yeah.
excuse to exploit them.
No, and especially on their where they're from.
Yeah.
You're an interloper. You're always an interloper. Okay? I mean, things are going to it's you can explain it in a modern way. What happens whenever their violence breaks out in like Los Angeles? They go after the Korean shop owners. Why do they go after the Korean shop owners? Because they're foreign. Because they're not from there. Now, I'm not saying that the Korean shop owner takes advantage of, is lending money and practicing usury in that neighborhood, but there is a correlation there to This is where we're from, where my parents are from, where my grandparents are from. How come we don't own the shops or anything like that? And now there are very good reasons for why they don't, but it also helps to explain the psychology behind it and the psychology behind having them come in and start buying up land and then leasing it back to, people. And a lot of that land Solzhenitsyn talks about was just given to them. They would give them land to farm, and then they would tenant farm it. They would give them equipment to farm the land, and they'd turn around and sell the equipment. And
Yeah,
they
this
would
was
take the
this.
money, and they would start lending out the money that they got the free equipment, and they sold it.
Yeah, this was a reform program of the Russians instituted to try to assimilate the Jewish population, which was a troublesome population, and they just simply wouldn't cooperate. And then we're told tales that they weren't allowed to own land, so they weren't allowed to work for a living, so they had to be engaged in finance and sort of extractive, exploitative usury and rent seeking. Usury and rent seeking, and rent seeking can take many forms. One thing is it can take a form of you can be, get involved in industries that are either get subsidies from the state, or they're sort of exploitative industries, particularly law, right? Law. This isn't to say that many Jews go into trades like medicine and they can excel in that, the arts, but even that becomes sort of manipulative, particularly like entertainment and music and movies becomes exploitative. But by and large, if your wealth accumulation is not through labor, but it's through usury and rent seeking, one thing is you're going to have an immense concentration of wealth, particularly as you develop into a money economy and finance and financial manipulation becomes more relevant as opposed to just agriculture and production. And it starts to actually destroy and exploit agriculture and production as opposed to helping it. But that speaks to the Jewish attitude about these things, which is distinct and unique as opposed to a traditional Christian understanding of these things,
And there's also just the straight up lying. It's like, well, we were forced into finance because we weren't allowed to be farmers. No, you were, it was perfectly okay for you to be farmers. The problem is that you would get the land, they would give you the land to farm, and then you would turn around and you'd lease it to somebody. You'd become a te you'd be a t it'd be tenant farming. And so what they did was they outlawed tenant farming. They could farm their own lands and be farmers, but I guess they didn't want to work with their hands. But there were areas in Ukraine that they were in, they did actually do were good at farming. And but there were just, and again, mentioning Solzhenitsyn, he talks about how basically it was like 3 to 5% of Jewish leadership in Ukraine and Russia were just lorded it over the rest. So they would do things like they would lobby the government so that no Jew would have to pay taxes for 10 years. And the government, after enough complaining, the government would be like, okay, well, then Jewish leadership, which there was Jewish leadership over every community, would take that opportunity to be like, okay, well, the state's not taxing you. You're going to pay taxes to us. And they would do that to their own people.
This is what the Kahal or something they call
Yeah,
that.
the Kahal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
See,
that's
they don't teach us this. I didn't learn any of this in history class.
no, I mean, I had to get a pirate, not pirated, but like a samizdat copy of 200 Years Together because it hasn't been officially translated into English yet to start reading that. And I mean, you can learn all of this in the, I mean, it's an 800 page book. You can learn this in the first 100 pages. The first 100 pages has so much history
And then
in
you're
it.
reading this and like, wait, this is occurring today.
Yeah,
It's
that's the yeah.
okay, this is why it's relevant. There's a as opposed to the idea that again the Jews don't organize, which I guess Jeff Greenblatt would call that a anti-Semitic trope. Now, is a trope necessarily untrue? Can a trope be true? I hear that a lot.
Oh,
Trope,
well,
a trope can be true, right?
tropes are definitely true.
So when he says it's an anti-Semitic trope, he's not saying he's not denying. He's just saying he's calling it a trope. You're supposed to think that it's not true, but
Well, you're not allowed. You're not supposed to talk about it. That's
he's
the thing. You're just not allowed to talk about it. I mean, he could talk about it. That's fine, but you're not allowed to talk about
well.
it. Or
Here's
you
this.
can talk.
One thing, we had this thing in last spring with the National Conference, or to I guess the U.S. National Strategy to Combat or Counter Anti-Semitism. The U.S. government mobilizes its forces, even using like the Park Service. And I guess getting Smokey the Bear to go on anti-Semitic campaigns or something, and all government agencies will start to war fight anti-Semitism, and you have these Jews meeting at the White House strategizing about how to combat anti-Semitism. One way to combat it is don't invite a bunch of Jews to the White House to strategize about anti-Semitism, because that's just going to create more anti-Semitism. Of course, it might be part of the strategy. There was a thing here. This is last week. Yeah, ADL and international Jewish groups formed the J7 to combat this is to combat anti-Semitism worldwide. So basically, we're supposed to be delusion. It's supposed to be delusional conspiracy theory to recognize that Jews coordinate internationally to advance, their objectives, goals, whatever. But here's this announcement where the ADL and major Jewish groups in seven countries team up to fight anti-Semitism altogether internationally. Large Jewish organizations in seven countries outside Israel have formed a task force to collaborate on fighting anti-Semitism. The task force, nicknamed J7, announced Tuesday, includes representatives of the United States, France, United Kingdom, Germany, Canada, Argentina, Australia. According to multiple recent estimates, these countries have the largest population of Jews outside Israel, excluding Russia, which was not included in the task force, of course. Israel was also not was also not Israel also will not have an official representative on the task force. The many, if not all, of their participating groups see combating anti-Zionism as part of their mandate. Anti-Semitism is arising around the world, especially in countries where there are large Jewish populations. Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, which is one of the group's members, said in a statement, "And threats to our communities are not contained by continents and borders. So you need a worldwide effort." But they don't. But then again, if you say the Jews organize, coordinate, and plan, strategize, you're an anti-Semitic conspiracy theorist.
If all of this anti-Semitism is growing around the world, would it make sense to step back and ask why? I mean, am I completely out of bounds in if you see all of this anti-Semitism, if these Jewish groups see all this anti-Semitism growing, whether it is or not, I mean, I don't know that it is. It just sounds like a power and more another power play, or money laundering of some sort through through this organization. Well, why do people? Why do people hate Jews? I mean, obviously, it's the easiest way out of that is, just jealousy for wealth, things like that. Well, okay. Well, what about the people that aren't jealous of wealth, don't care anything about money? Well, no, everybody cares everything about money. That sounds like a Jewish trope. So, why are we going? Is no one going to ask? If anti-Semitism is growing around the globe, why?
Well, again, they call it anti-Semitism, like it's some sort of ideology or something or a phenomena.
Well, it's called anti-Semitism because then you can be accused of being racist.
Yes, which might be illegal and actually actually be illegal. And of course, this is something that they don't define. So
Right.
criticism of Jew of a particular Jew or Jewish organizations, or criticism how these Jewish organizations operate and how Jews spend their money, I think you can criticize people for what they do and how they behave and the organizations they support, especially if they're supporting organizations or causes that are destructive to the host society.
Or their
That's not,
religion.
or their
You
religion for that
cannot
matter. Yeah.
like their religion. You cannot like their culture.
Yeah.
You cannot like, what what a lot of their organizations do with their money and what they promote.
Like, what I don't like about Jewish culture is their lack of introspection. Yeah. That's a fair criticism.
Yeah. I don't like about Jewish culture is it seems like their morality is subjective. Basically everything is predicated on intellect.
Mm-hmm.
And rationalism. It seems like everything is a rationalization to them. I mean, that's basically what the Talmud is the Talmud is rationalizing away the laws that God handed down, in the Torah
mm-hmm.
to them. So I don't like that they're not a race. I mean, there's Oriental Jews, there's European Jews, there's Sephardic Jews. That's not a race. There's no coherent race there. It's a belief system. It's a spirit. I don't like it.
Well, there is the World Jewish Congress, the World Zionist Organization, the Jewish Agents for Israel. There's the American Jewish Committee. There's the obviously there's AIPAC. There's the Israeli state, and it's all organs. It's intelligence operations. And it's various companies that operate with close connection to the Israeli state, like Unit 8200, which ties into all types of high tech and social media companies throughout Europe and the United States. So there's all reasons to suspect this organization, Jewish organization. And when you have a group like this form, they're admitting that they are a form and they are coordinating with ties back to a particular state, which means that every Jew in those countries, I'm looking at the flags, Australia, Germany, Canada, New Zealand, United States, France, they're all suspect then, because this group, which is international, and that internet and their identity is the diaspora, the Jewish people, Israel, if you will, because that's really what it is. It's all the Jewish people around the world comprise the Israeli state. It's been instantiated or become incarnate in Israel. But even before that, there was a notion of a Jewish people in the diaspora all throughout the world, which shared a common identity and common loyalty outside their host countries, which meaning they were a nation within a nation and therefore they're suspect, and also therefore the rights and privileges of those nations and the sovereignty that was imposed, the rights that the citizens were within that state based on the sovereignty of that nation could not be applied to the Jewish population because they were this unique group. So basically, historically, there were barriers and restrictions to them, which collapsed in the 19th century. And since then, they've used the collapse of these restrictions to sort of insinuate themselves and more or less take over these governments so they can become agents for them. And we see that now. I think it's pretty obvious now when, like, the president of Israel shows up and gets 30 standing ovations that the Congress is ordered to give because they're all either bribed or blackmailed. That's the situation.
Yeah.
I mean,
they've insinuated themselves into the most important places and the most influential places, so that they can basically shape the culture and the politics of whatever host nation they're in.
For their interest, yes. For
their interest, yeah. Yes. I mean, obviously, if the former head of the ADL says that Jews will be safe when the United States is no longer a white Christian country, that is him. Well, according to anyone listening who is a who. thinks that we're anti-Semites for saying this. Well, that's just his opinion. It doesn't matter that he's the head of the ADL. He doesn't speak for all Jews.
What does it matter that the policies that he endorses or he's advocating have become the policies of the Department of Homeland Security, that's being run by a fellow Jew?
Yeah.
Am I guilty of pattern recognition here, or?
Well, yeah, you're not allowed. That's why you have to. That's why everybody has to be judged as an individual, except white people. White people have to be lumped into this group that has done the unspeakable and evils that were unlike any that have ever been done in the history of mankind.
And
And
when
that's
Nate Foxman says that, when Nate Foxman says that the, Jews will be safe when America, United States is no longer a majority white Christian nation, what he's saying is Jews will be safe when America is no longer exists.
yeah.
Because that's the culture of America. It's the culture that built America. That's the core ethnic group of the United States. And no one's voting on this. No one vote. In fact, to the extent that they voted on it, there have always been immigration restrictions, whether in the United States, even in Europe, have always been popular, but the policies are never followed. Isn't that funny?
Yeah,
The governments
and
can never seem to muster the will to impose that policy, even though it's widely popular by the host population. Then you bring in an alien population, it's no longer as popular. That's democracy. That's our democracy, right?
I'm willing to say, okay, they may genuinely be scared that, there was this white nation at one point that did not like them, did not want them in their country. And if you had three grandparents who were Jewish, that's they were like, well, we don't want you here. And they were willing to sacrifice a bunch of their own people to make sure that white nation didn't continue. And ever since then, it seems like any what they've done a pretty good job of advocating that any white nation not be white anymore. I
Yeah, and
mean,
that's I mean, that's why I have that lady write that poem and puts it on the foot of the Statue of Liberty, right?
yeah,
Emily
and
Lazarus.
then there one of their people, writes a play called The Melting Pot.
And then a few other people advocate for 40 years to change the nation's im to immigration laws that result in
And
the displacement of America's white majority, supermajority.
I used to say, I just thought that it was they wanted to do that because they wanted to make countries multicultural so that they blended in easier. They weren't, it wasn't like Germany where they stuck out like a sore thumb. They could blend in easier, but no, they want to destroy the host population. They want to, I mean, the former head of the ADL said it. He wants to destroy your faith, and if you happen to have white skin color, that's another thing that needs to be destroyed.
Yeah, and he's a
I mean,
baptized Catholic.
I'm sorry.
Abe Fox was a baptized Catholic.
Well.
He was adopted by a Catholic family in Poland during World War II. And when the war was over, the family showed they abandoned him, and they were taken him by a Catholic family. He was baptized, and when the war ended, they came back and took him. So I guess no good deed goes unpunished, as they say.
Well, somebody said, I forgot who said it, read it like a year and a half ago, said, you would think if stopping the Holocaust, since it was white people and white people and Slavic people who stopped the Holocaust, they'd be erecting statues to us.
Yeah, but, well, yeah, today's dissolution of the West is called Jewish gratitude.
I mean, they have to they must really hate me because I mean, I can trace my bloodlines back to Spain and to, Eastern Europe. So it's not like anyone in Spain ever did anything to them. But there was a reason.
Yes.
There was a reason. I mean, it's absolutely amazing when you start reading that history of how Christians were enslaved and forced to convert, forced to get circumcised, and forced to work the land of their fathers.
And then you had the whole idea of, the false convert the Converso crisis, which just ended with them expelling them, and they went to Poland and the Netherlands, where they fostered revolution.
Yeah, and the ink was, I mean, the Inquisition was one of the main reasons why why the Inquisition was started was to question them, to find out whether they had a real conversion or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had a real conversion, everything was fine. If they didn't have a real conversion and they were just pretending to be Catholics, but they were still practicing Judaism, they could repent right on the spot there or leave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were given a choice. And some decided to leave and some decided to, you know, oh, I repent of it. I want to be baptized for real. And then just continued down that road. And then they would be brought back later. And, you know, consequently, you know, the Spanish, the king, you know, meted out consequences.
Yeah, it's,
I mean, if you're going to be in somebody's country, you follow their rules.
Yeah. Of course, they had allied with the Muslims.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're the ones that surrendered Toledo to them. And then that was, they have that betrayal. But again, if you're a Christian, an American, and you have Abe Foxman, leader of a major Jewish organization, saying we have to end America as a Christian white nation, what do you make of that? That's a declaration of, you know, ethnic warfare. But then again, we're supposed to sit back and let them carry on and engage in their subversion and their influence without being, at the very least, you call them out for what they are. They're anti-Christian. Because they're Jewish. And they need to be criticized and dealt with on those terms, as opposed to running away from the anti-Semitism charge, you know, being worried that you can be called a name. You know, you've either, you know, have, you know, basically have your country overrun and your whole culture destroyed just because you don't want to be called a name, which is kind of how we got where we are now today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people even say that that was one of the points of MK Ultra.
Mm-hmm.
Was to help people not to cause people not to see a growth in less than 2% of the population taking over and being influential in so many cultural and political and financial endeavors.
Well, that's just so funny. You see their overrepresentation in these key areas, whether it's finance, you know, academia, entertainment, and that's never called out. But that's only explained as their talent and their intelligence. It's not because they have ethnic nepotism,
right,
and they're scheming and taking over organizations. However, if you look at something like a legal doctrine called disparate impact, which I think is a Jewish idea, I think, if you have any underrepresentation of any other group, it can be used against a white majority, even though the reason for that underrepresentation might have nothing to do with race. It might have just has something to do with that particular group may not be performing well or can't perform well at any given time. That's what idea was, because you do away with, this is how civil rights has been used. And of course, the Jews were played a key role in spearheading the civil rights movement. Again, this is another covert warfare against the ethnic white majority, exploiting the black underclass. But the idea that if you do away with these laws, Jim Crow, if you will, laws against segregation, the barriers, these things, that you somehow overnight you'd get equality across the board. That's ridiculous. You're never going to get that. At least what they claimed would happen would be sort of a great leap forward. And all of a sudden you have equality. Well, no, because the causes of inequality weren't just the segregation or the barriers. In many ways, those were symptoms of inequality, of differences. So you're not going to get equality across the board, because you don't get equality in the conditions of freedom, because people are in groups are different. And they're going to perform differently. And we saw that that's been highlighted under the doctrine of disparate impact, because what happens, whether it's a test to get on, a fire department or a police department or applications to universities or applications for jobs, you have these race neutral tests that are performance based or based on test scores or academic performance. But they do disparately impact Blacks and Hispanics because they don't perform well. But that's not because of racism. It's because they're just not performing well. But so the solution under disparate impact is to ignore the fact that they can't perform up to the standards. You just do away with the standards. So then eventually you have what they call a crisis in competence, where the sophisticated society that you constructed starts to crumble, because you're discriminated against the core ethnic group that provides those groups those people that are competent, and you're filling those slots with incompetent people. So it's only a matter of time before the water spigots start running, the power grid fails, and the bridges start to collapse. You know, because in the name of diversity, you had to do that. And that's what we're seeing. We've seen that in other countries. We're seeing, we're starting to see that in the United States now.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why when you have a founding of a country, if you have smart people who are doing it, starting from scratch, they're designing the inner workings of it around the population, how the population can thrive the best. And it seems like this one was designed for religious white men, farmers, people like that. And when you start inserting people into it that aren't of that stock, well, then one of two things is going to happen. Either wherever, if it's so different from wherever they came from, they're going to fail. Or if they can adapt, they thrive. Problem is if enough of those people come in from one group, then you'll have activism that will seek to change, not to try to bring that group up or teach that group to be more like the founding stock so that they can better function in the society. But now you have to change society to be more like that invading group. And when you do that, well, then the people who were already here, who were brought up in a certain way, now they start to be affected by it. And the biggest problem is that whenever those changes are made for the to benefit the invading group, it never benefits them. It usually only benefits the people who the activists who are promoting this change. So basically everybody loses except for the people at the top and these activists who end up almost always working with the people at the top. And then you that's how you get in, basically how you get an oligarchy is you now you have just a couple, you just have a small group that can really thrive within it, and then everything else just starts getting worse and worse and worse. And sure, some people are able to take advantage of because they may be exceptional, they can take advantage of the opportunities that are still there and thrive in it. But more and more, you're going to have a middle class, and then eventually over time, you're going to that middle class is going to disappear, and you're just going to have a lower class, and you're going to have an upper class. And I think that's where where we're headed now. And I think that's where we've been headed for a long time, but I think it's becoming much clearer now. And when you look at wages, wage increases, when you look at those charts since going off the gold standard in the 70s, and it just looks like everything's going in one direction, and the wealth just gets more concentrated into one area.
Yeah, we saw that. Like, if you an example, it would be the state of California, when the white middle class has been displaced, and now what you have increasingly, you have a dwindling middle class, white middle class. You have a growing underclass and an elite that can preside over a state, and they can just rob it dry, as the infrastructure crumbles, as things become. You have anarcho tyranny, more degeneracy, these things, because that underclass is much easier to rule over, lacks the agency and the competence to challenge and the awareness to really challenge at least make some demands, reasonable demands of to share the wealth, if you will, from the overclass, from the overclass ruling class, So you get sort of again, it's a plan for oligarchy, something the United States had always had a broad middle class, which at the very least restrained the oligarchy that was presumably always there.
Yeah, and then
Yeah.
you have the high low versus the middle. The oligarchs understand that if they rally the people on the bottom against the people in the middle, then there's you're going to have constant strife, and the only ones that really end up winning are the ones on top, and they can just keep doing what they're doing, which is why, I mean, you're always going to have elites. You're always going to be, your rulers are always going to be elites, except you want leaders, you want proper governance, and you want impressive elites. And I don't think this country has had impressive elites for a very long time. So,
Yeah, it's, you definitely don't want Jewish elite.
And that's the problem is that when you have a people when you have a people who have a certain ethos that is directly at odds with, the founding stock, the founding ideas, or at least the ideas of the people who, the farmers and the people who worked the land. It just seems to clash head on. So then you have to create terms like Judeo-Christian values and propaganda terms like that that Christians can buy into to think that, well, we come from the same place, and then you convince them with lies like the notes in the Scofield Bible that these are the chosen people, and people don't really pay attention to who they're being ruled by and just exactly what those people believe and what their ethos is.
And you have the money to either give or loan them to build their mega churches to preach that.
Yeah.
Jerry Falwell, I think it was Menachem Begin, gave Jerry Falwell a jet. So Jerry Falwell was a Christian Zionist. Funny how that was. So, I mean, to the extent that Jerry Falwell was engaged in something like the Moral Majority and opposition to things like abortion and feminism, things are all Jewish causes. At the end of the day, he was a Christian Zionist, so he was unable to really engage the forces that were promoting all the degenerates that he supposedly was fighting against with his Moral Majority.
Yeah, I mean the Orthodox and Catholics, well, up until the 60s, were always keep the Jews at keep Jewish leadership and Jews at arm's length, and it's the Protestants who were always the Protestants who fell for the eschatology of the Jews being God's chosen people, and that Israel needed to become into existence, which, gee, it's just amazing that that all popped up right around the same time that the proto-Zionists started all of their writings.
Yeah, the
And
19th century heresy.
it's a 19th century heresy that Protestantism has adopted, and depending on which church you go into, it's pretty much a crapshoot of any Protestant church you go into, whether you're going to be hearing this just utter heresy. And
Yeah, and
I'm not scared to call it a heresy because, I understand that it's in the Bible, it says that there's always a remnant. And if the remnant is now, and it does seem prideful to consider myself to be in that remnant, but I just look at this doctrine of what they call dispensationalism, and I mean I just don't see this anywhere in the Bible, and so I don't know, and then I look at the previous 1800 years of church history, and I don't see it anywhere. It pops up in the 19th century, and you're supposed to just, oh well, this guy wrote some notes to put in a Bible, and if you read these, you're going to know exactly what happens in the future. So not only is it just basically a lie and the man's a false prophet, but you're playing on people's pride. For the same reason people love conspiracy theories because it makes them feel like they have some kind of special knowledge. Now Christians get to feel that in reading the Scofield Bible, where they have special knowledge, where they can predict when the year Jesus is going to come back, which a bunch of them have tried over the last 200 years and absolutely fall flat on their face. But yet the sheep just keep buying along and going to those churches.
Yep. And of course, with the Catholic Church, I guess it was a 1965 with Nostra Aetate, where it sought to create a dialogue with the Jews, but it also came out and condemned all forms of anti-Semitism without defining anti-Semitism. So we're back to that problem again. So if it's as broad as the ADL claims it is, anti-Semitism is simply a criticism and questioning of Jews or Jewish power, which means that anything short of philo-Semitism or Jewish supremacy is condemned. So it doesn't do any good if you don't define it, meaning there are reasons to oppose Jewish power, Jewish scheming and organizations. At the very least, history suggests there are good reasons to oppose that and to call out the Jews for their many, many sins and affronts to humanity. The gospel says they're the enemy of mankind. And if you believe the gospel, Jesus Christ is the savior of humanity. Yes, if they seek to drive people away from Jesus Christ and reject Jesus Christ, they are the enemies of mankind. That's a theological statement. It doesn't necessarily mean you terrorize the Jews or you harass them. That's the principle the church had, sicut Judaeus non, meaning that the Jews should go unmolested, unbothered, but the Jew cannot corrupt society. So there's a check on that. But we no longer impose any restrictions on the Jews' ability to corrupt and manipulate and exploit society anymore. If anything, capitalism and liberalism facilitates it, because it denies us the protections, not just the legal and customary protections that may restrict their access to certain positions that I think are prudent to keep them from having, whether be they governmental, corporate, economic, or cultural, if you want to protect your society. These values, Christian values. Liberalism doesn't acknowledge that, but it even deprives you of the vocabulary. Like what I just said, most people will find repulsive. That's racist. Well, that's not a race. Really? Yeah. How's it racist? But that's anti-Semitic. They're back. That word again. Well, let's go over this history again. It's not as simple as the Jewish narrative is very self-serving. And if you give them the sole right to tell us what happened and what that narrative is, which they pretty much do with the control of Hollywood and the ability to control a public discourse on these things. Well, yeah, it does sound that way. But then the moment you start to think about it and critique it and actually take apart their narrative, it's not as simple as they claim it is. I mean, let's have real dialogue here. it's quite a dilemma that they've cornered the West End in this thing.
Well, Werner Sombart wrote a book called Jews and Modern Capitalism, in which he clearly notes that basically everything that has anything to do with finance, commerce, merchants, anything is basically has come from Judaism. And when you look at the culture that's been built, it's a culture built on subjective truth, on rationalizing away any kind of criticism, and the intellect, materialism, is held above all. We live in a Jewish world.
Yeah, Yuri Susskind wrote The Jewish Century. He said the modern world is Jewish world.
Yeah,
these are Jewish authors, by the way, saying this, so we're quoting. But yeah, again, these are just, it's just one Jew, it's just two Jews, so it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, Thomas used that book as his main guide through the first couple episodes, the first three episodes of our series on the JQ. And why? Because, well, he's a Jewish author, and two, he tells it like it is, and kind of, puts the numbers out there. How many in the Bolshevik, soldiery were Jews, and Why did they want to insinuate themselves into those positions for payback?
And it's another thing is another question is to what extent is this particular is the problem the Jews or is it liberalism? I mean, the Jews are able to use liberalism, so it's a flawed philosophy. Meaning, if you look at it, what made liberalism appear to work in the United States was that it was supported by traditional society, illiberal institutions like local small towns, if you will, hierarchy, family. These things aren't liberal institutions, nor are they subject to political whims. These things are, they last from generation to generation. And if these things are sustained, then you can, on top of that, you can have a liberal political system because supporting that liberal political system is a firm cultural blood and soil foundation. But when that society becomes cosmopolitan, becomes Jewish, liberalism is just has no foundation to it anymore. And it becomes, I think it becomes a very empty, a very vulnerable institution that can be infiltrated and taken over. And then the hammer can be lowered, like we're seeing now, meaning Jews use liberalism to get control, the language, free speech, free access, anti-discrimination, to get control of society. And then once they're in control of society, they lower the boom and start developing things like, critical race theory to deny, to deprive or dispossess the majority. They come up with things like hate speech to do away with concepts of free speech so they can avoid the critique that they like to impose on somebody else. They can avoid the dialogue that free speech will necessarily create, the exposure, the scrutiny that it creates, but it becomes hate speech. And again, this goes back to the Talmudic Jewish way of twisting the language and rationalizing everything and using their high verbal IQ. But always, as I pointed out a few years ago, that someone was talking about the high verbal Jewish IQ, which might explain their success. And I said, well, that may be true. Despite their high verbal IQ, they still have to impose censorship. What does that say?
Yeah.
They can't deal with the argument.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the argument can never be why.
Mm-hmm.
You can never ask the question why, because if you're asking the question why, then you're, if you allow the why discussion, then there's a chance of another genocide. You're asking for another genocide.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the way you see, it's the rationalization that you see for, why you can't allow anyone who asks questions like this is a Nazi, and they have to be called a Nazi because Nazis are the worst people who ever lived. And if you, which is what they say, which is what they've convinced everybody of, mm-hmm. they were killed, they were executed, they needed to be executed, even though it was a kangaroo court and Eichmann's trial was a kangaroo court, and these things have nothing to do with the rule of law, classic rule of law, common law, anything. And since those people were, it was okay to execute those monsters, then any monster now who's asking these questions is less than human.
Yes.
So it's you don't need to be listened to. You are marginalized. You should be removed from society. And they have shock troops on the streets that if they get a chance, they'll release them on you. It's the way I see everything now. I see everything through politics has always been about friend enemy. But it's never been any clearer now.
When people call it Merrick Garland for being, this is double standard. You're abusing your power. Yeah, he's a Czechist. Yeah. that's what Czechists do. You have a Jewish attorney general who's behaving like a Bolshevik or a Czechist. That you're shocked.
For centuries, been kicked out of
mm-hmm.
a lot of countries. I mean, they said the number is 100, the common number is 109, but it's really like upwards of 2,000 locations if you go back, if you go back to Egypt. And you know, you're not allowed to ask why. So anyone who ever did that, or you know, in many cases, people had gotten so fed up with them that people were put to death. Anyone who ever did that is an enemy, and they need to be destroyed. And Christians did it, or Orthodox Christians did it, Catholics did it. So they, you know, Christians need to be destroyed.
And that's why Victoria Nuland is handing out cookies, fomenting a revolution in 2014 in Ukraine.
Yeah, for the Khmelnytskyi,
Yeah.
because of something that happened in this 17th century.
Yeah, there's E. Michael Jones did a piece a couple of years ago. There was a black Muslim group that was protesting outside the statue of Louis XIII, St. Louis, the statue that he's the patron, you know, saint of St. Louis, the city. There's a statue there, and there were, you know, this is, I think, was 2020 or a year before. It might have been during 2020, through all the iconoclasm was going on, so they wanted to rope that in, tear down that statue too. And apparently, looked into it, the black Muslim group had been agitated by this radical Jewish lady rabbi who got them to do it. And he did the investigation. And so then he contacted the Jewish groups down there and says, "Oh, that lady's crazy. Don't pay any attention to her." And he asked them, "Well, will you come out with me and condemn her?" He says, "No, we won't do that because she's Jewish." But it turns out that she was getting this black group, again, this black Muslim group, to front for her to protest outside the statue of St. Louis about racism, although he was I think, a 13th century French monarch who never owned a slave. That was before the European slave trade, you know, was engaged in black chattel slavery. If anything, it was during when the white slave trade was dominant, actually. But anyway, they wanted to tear the statue down. And why would they want to tear the statue down? What's wrong with St. Louis? Well, what's wrong with St. Louis is St. Louis, he's the one that ordered the burning of the Talmud. So, but they have long memories.
I mean, I do too.
I mean, it's like, wow. What's in the Talmud? That was the response of the Pope at the time. Oh, wow, look what's in the Talmud. And so he ordered the burning. There was an investigation. Now, this is, you know, at the time, you know, it was considered, you know, it was blasphemy, of course. Of course, blasphemy exists. We have blasphemy laws today now. If you question the Holocaust, in many countries, you go to jail. That's a blasphemy law. So, you know, before you look askance or look down at the primitive, you know, French of the 13th century, look what we're doing today. You know, but I just thought it was funny. Wow, he ordered the burning of the Talmud, and they want to take down a statue today. You know, so.
And it's just another example of them, you know, using shock troops in order to do it.
Yeah, and they send these black group to show up to do it, so they get they catch the flak, and they're beating up. And it's racist, and they're beating up I think they beat up like a there was some Catholic woman that was praying in the rosary or something, you know, and she's black, defending the statue. So that's it's not, you know, it was they want to make a racial issue. It wasn't a racial issue, it was the Jewish Catholic divide. That was the division lines of that particular issue, but they injected the race issue to cover up for it. You know, so anyway, Pete, I said I have your hour and a half. I think we're there.
I mean, I appreciate it. And anytime you ask me to come on, I'm going to do it. And
Thanks.
this was great. It gave me a chance to really think about some of the stuff that I've been thinking about as Thomas has been going through this with Thomas and you know, some of his very sober, I think, and very nuanced take on, you know, the Jewish question.
Did he come up with the term Nuremberg regime?
I'm pretty sure he may have. I don't know that he's the first person I ever heard use it. But it is spot on. Once you study what happened at Nuremberg and then you see how everything has played out since then, it really is, we're living under the Nuremberg regime. I mean, what did he say? He said basically, Nuremberg made it so that if you're right wing, you're a criminal.
And it extends to things like how how history treats people like Franco or Salazar, and again, taking these things out of context, calling him a dictator. Well, what was supposed to do? The communists were raping nuns and burning down churches and killing priests, destroying Spanish culture. A
Oh
prime
no, that
minister
wasn't the communists. That was the anarchists,
with
Tim.
the And why would Bolsheviks want to burn churches down and rape nuns?
It's just so weird. I don't know why. I don't know why. For the same reason that what was his name? That pornographer, Al
It's
Goldstein
Al
said.
Goldstein.
For the same reason he said that Jews are so rampant in pornography, maybe.
I think he said because Jesus sucks. Quote, I'm
Because
quoting him.
Jesus sucks and we need to, anything that we can do to, tarnish his image and, basically upset Christians. I mean, it's on his Wikipedia page.
There you go. That's the meth that's the message of the 20th century, I think.
Pretty much. It's well, yeah, it was the Jewish cent it it's a Jewish century.
So, okay, Pete, want to plug anything?
The Pete Quinones Show and PeteSubstack.com. I appreciate it, Tim. Always. Thank
Thank you
you.
so much. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
In America, you get foodie. Won't have to run through the jungle and scuff up your feet. You just sing about Jesus and drink wine all day. It's great to be an American. Ain't no lion or tiger, ain't no mama snake. Just a sweet watermelon in a buckwheat cake. Everybody is as happy as a man can be. Climb aboard, little walk, sail away with me. Sail away. Sail away. We will cross the mighty ocean into Charleston Bay. Sail away. Sail away. We will cross the mighty ocean into Charleston Bay. Cross the mighty ocean into Charleston Bay.